of information and distinguishing themselves from groups that are not for revolutionary internationalism. Quote, what can we do practically, individually, and collectively, home and abroad? On the most basic level, thinking globally, acting locally. Refuse their consensus and call out the hypocrisy, advocating for ourselves and our class across frontiers. Collectively, reject their national interest. Unquote.
Longtime paid FBI informant was instrumental in terror case. From The Intercept by Noah Hurwitz and Trevor Aronson. News story about an undercover effort that got results, as is not hard to do when state forces are perfectly capable and known to lie about those they're investigating. A fairly sympathetic, or at least skeptical, account from this mainstream source. Quote, the case had the familiar markings of FBI terrorism stings that stretch back more than two decades. Hundreds of cases that have disproportionately targeted left-wing activists and Muslims, and less often right-wing actors. Unquote. And, quote, the FBI had visibility into nearly every part of the supply chain. Chemicals ordered online and pistol primers purchased at a retail store. Agents could have intervened at any stage. They didn't. Instead, the Bureau allowed the plan to continue, with both an informant and an undercover agent actively participating in the conspiracy. Unquote. The definition of entrapment, folks. For the nothing that that is worth.
Anti-war, audio and video, anti-war resistance in Russia and anarchists. From Avtonom, 38 minutes. A talk given as a presentation for the Bristol Anarchist Book Fair November 1st by Antti Rau Teinen. It's a slightly updated version of the presentation given in September at another place in Bristol and before a few times in Greece. It talks about the large and quickly dwindling anti-war protests in Russia, which have been heavily repressed. Goes into some of the economics and why Russia continues the invasion. Then goes into some cases of specific prisoners. The sound is clear, the accent is thick, but entirely intelligible. A worthwhile listen.
Hello, everyone. This is Artemis, and I would say with the Uncivilized podcast, but this is the Anarchist News podcast. Today is the 19th of December, and I'm joined by two guests.
Hi, I'm Anna.
Hi, I'm Arun.
And we're going to talk about the very infamous, in the news, Turtle Island Liberation Front, or Black Lotus. There has been some articles posted on the website, but we're going to focus on the one titled Longtime Paid Informant, FBI Informant Was Instrumental in Terror Case. And this comes from The Intercept. You guys want me to read it, or do either of you feel disposed? Okay, I'm being pointed to, so. Kesh Patel and others touted the FBI's investigative work, but the few available details point to a more complicated picture. An FBI investigation into alleged terror plot in Southern California bears the familiar hallmarks of the Bureau's long-running use of informants and undercover agents to advance plots that might not otherwise have materialized, court documents show. News of the plot surfaced Monday morning in a Fox News report that ran ahead of court filings or official statements. Within minutes, FBI officials amplified the story on social media. Protect the homeland and crush violent crime, wrote FBI Director Dan Bongino?
I don't know.
Bongino, a former podcaster. Oh, well, we have a shared profession here. These words are not slogans.
Must be overthrown.
These words are not slogans to the investigative pillars of this FBI. What followed, however, painted a more complicated picture. The limited details available suggest an investigation that leaned heavily on a paid informant and at least one undercover FBI agent, according to affidavit filed in federal court. The informant and the undercover agent were involved in nearly every stage of the case, including discussions of operational security and transporting members of the group to the site in the Mojave Desert, where federal agents ultimately made the arrests. The informant, who has worked other cases on the FBI's payroll since 2021, has been in contact with the group known as Turtle Island Liberation Front since at least late November, just 2 months after President Donald Trump designated Antifa as a domestic terrorism organization. On the morning of December 15th, Director Kash Patel announced the arrests, calling the plot a, quote, credible imminent terrorist threat. Yet the case had the familiar markings of FBI terrorism stains that stretch back more than two decades. Hundreds of actions that have disproportionately targeted left-wing activists and Muslims, and, less often, right-wing actors. Since the September 11 attacks, the FBI had relied on informants to identify and build terrorism cases. The structures created a perverse incentives for potential informants. The cooperation can get them out of criminal cases of their own and lead to handsome monetary compensation. The FBI's call is simple. Bring cases, get paid. As an aside, we were just talking about this before, but I'm immediately calling back to part of the Green Scare era, the ELF actions on the West Coast, in which someone was turned into basically a snitch or a CI because he was caught up with unrelated criminal drug charges, and therefore he was kind of coerced into it on the way that he, if he didn't snitch on his friends and his comrades, he wouldn't see his family again. Rick Smith, a security consultant and former FBI agent, said confidential sources are essential to investigative police work, but cautioned that they come with inherent baggage. They're sources, not ordinary citizens, Smith said. They either have been compromised in some way or they're going to be paid. Either way, if they got some sort of skin in the game, they're getting something out of it. In the years after the 2001 attacks, FBI created a market for case involving left-wing activists and Muslims. After the January 6th Capitol riot, the Bureau made clear to informants that right-wing extremism was the priority. Now, after the second Trump administration, the federal government's focus is again turning to perceived left-wing extremism. In September, days after the terror designation of Antifa, Trump outlined his administration's war on the left in a memo titled National Security Presidential Memorandum 7, or NSPM-7, which called for the National Joint Terrorism Task Force to coordinate with local offices to investigate alleged federal crimes by political radicals. The head of the federal prosecutor's office in Los Angeles said on Monday that TILF arrests stemmed from Trump's executive order. Key questions in the Turtle Island Liberation Front case, however, remained unanswered. It is unclear how the FBI first identified the group or how long the informant had been embedded before the bomb plot emerged, a period defense attorneys say is central to any serious examination of entrapment, whereby defendants are coerced into crimes they would otherwise not commit. A frequent criticism of Steen's involvement in informants and undercover agents. Quote, the question that immediately popped into my mind was that, there's a reference to a confidential human source, but there's no indication of how that source came to be, said Brad Crowder, an activist and union organizer who was convicted in a case of alleged violent protest plans that involved a confidential informant. Quote, it's not totally out of the realm of possibilities that this idea was planted or floated by whoever this confidential human source might be. Turtle Island case. Despite comments from Attorney General Pam Bondi, Patel, and others characterizing TILF as a coherent group in a Signal chat called Black Lotus as an ultra-radical subset, there's little evidence that any group by that name exists beyond a small digital footprint and handful of attempts at organizing community events, including a self-defense workshop and a punk rock benefit show planned for February. Funded, of course, by your local corporate entities, but that's neither here nor there. The Instagram page for TILF, cited in the complaint, had just over 1,000 followers as of Tuesday morning after it was widely publicized, and the first post came in late July. The YouTube channel bearing the group's name, which had 18 subscribers as of Tuesday morning, was registered on July 17th and contains a single video posted on September 16th. Online, the group styled itself as radical and righteous. Its activists spoke in a language of solidarity with Palestinians and indigenous people, railing against ICE and American power. On Instagram, they posted slogans and absolutes. Become a revolutionary. America has always been the brutal monster that some of you don't want to face. Resistance is the deepest form of love. The informant, however, did not meet with the group on November 26th for slogans. According to the affidavit, the informant met up with Audrey Eileen Carroll, who went by the nickname
Azignok.
At the meeting, Carroll handed over 8 pages covered with handwriting in blue ink. The document was titled
Operation Midnight Sun,
and laid out a plan to detonate backpack bombs at 5 separate locations on New Year's Eve, when fireworks would mask the sound of the explosions. The plan was unfinished. Beneath the list of targets were blank lines marked, add more if enough comrades, in parentheses. Carroll's attorneys did not immediately respond to requests for comment. Over the following weeks, the plot advanced according to court filings. A similar group was created for, in the participant words, everything radical, including the bomb plan itself. December 7th, the supposed bomb plot expanded to include an undercover FBI agent. At that meeting, Carol distributed pages describing how to build bombs. She said she had nearly 13 PVC pipes cut to size and ordered 2 5-pound bags of potassium nitrate from Amazon, believing naively that a burner account she had set up was keeping her anonymous. Delivery was scheduled for December 11th. BDS should be a reminder here. The FBI had visibility into nearly every part of the supply chain, chemicals ordered online, and pistol primers purchased at a retail store. Agents could have intervened at any stage. They didn't. Instead, the Bureau allowed the plan to continue, with both an informant and an undercover agent actively participating in the conspiracy. On December 12th, the group drove into the desert with the aim of testing the bombs. They took 2 vehicles, the informant in one, the undercover agent in the other. Riding with the undercover agent was Zachary Aaron Page, who went by the nickname AK. He suggested using cigarettes as a delayed fuse. In the other car, Carol told another member that the desert exercise was a dry run for the New York Eves attack. And will be considered a terrorist act, she said, according to the affidavit. At this site, they pitched tents and set up tables. They laid out PVC pipes, charcoal, sulfur, gasoline, strain, cloth, and protective gear. As they began assembling the devices, the FBI moved in. Overhead, an FBI surveillance plane recorded the scene as agents took into custody 4 alleged members of TILF, including Carol and Page, along with Tina Lai and Dante Gaffield. Nonpartisan incentive structure. Terrorism prosecutions built around confidential informants have long drawn criticism, particularly over the risk of entrapment. For more than a decade, legal scholars have argued while those cases often resemble classic government inductment, they rarely ever meet the standard for entrapment. Courts define predisposition so broadly that ideological sympathy or recorded rhetoric is treated as evidence of a pre-existing willingness to commit violence, a framework that effectively shields government manufactured plots from meaningful judicial scrutiny. The concerns surfaced starkly in a previous sting operation involving the so-called Newburgh 4, in which an aggressive and prolific FBI informant steered 4 poor black men into a scheme to bomb synagogues and attack an Air Force base. Years later, a federal judge granted the men compassionate release, describing the case as a, quote, FBI orchestrated conspiracy. Because FBI informants are so instrumental in building cases, they're used to be leveraged by authorities to focus resources on investigations with more political overtones. We're going to skip ahead a while because it goes into some examples. Part of the playbook, Ryder said, is for an informant to exploit their target's righteous anger. In the case of the TILF, Turtle Bay Liberation Front, which
I think they meant Turtle Island.
Yeah, it looks like it might be a typo. Rights violations in Palestine and ICE actions in Los Angeles. From there, the authorities take advantage of the alleged plotters' political immaturity, walking hand in hand with them as they cross the line from legal dissent into legal conspiracy. The informant gets paid, the FBI gets a good headline that justifies the anti-terrorism budget, and the defendants are left to face the consequences, often without ever posing a real threat to public safety, Crowder said. On both sides, you have a sort of momentum that develops. The ICE repression is crazy, and that fades into a sort of hopelessness that drives a sort of nihilistic response that you see from people who have immature politics. And then that heartfelt but immature and irresponsible response plays into the incentive structure of the FBI. All right, that was a long one. I'm going to stop talking and let the other two kind of take a lead on where they want to take this conversation.
Okay. I think in terms of responses that I've seen to this, to this action online, there are some people who are saying the whole thing is like a false flag, or like everyone involved is feds. It's an entirely fake organization. And then there are other people who are saying that the group is real, and like, you know, the FBI's narrative is in some sense, you know, correct, that there was a real group and then it was infiltrated. And there's sort of a question of like, to what extent was their intent to bomb things like organic and rising out of the group, and to what extent was that sort of intent manufactured by the confidential informant? I don't see it as being likely that the whole thing is like an FBI manufactured group. Just sort of because to me they strike me as people who are perhaps green or inexperienced or new to activism, haven't been around in activist spaces for very long, and were sort of jumping at the opportunity to do something. And then there was an informant there. I can kind of, so the timeline, it seems like the web presence of TILF starts in like July. And then late September, September 25th, is when the Trump administration published NSPM 7. And we have a quote from a federal prosecutor, Bill Esaley, who says, "This investigation into TILF was initiated in part due to the September 2025 executive order signed by President Trump to root out left-wing domestic terror organizations in our country, such as Antifa and other radical groups." So to me, I kind of feel like this investigation, the presence of that confidential informant, was maybe, you know, began in early October. The confidential informant's narrative starts in late November. And when you actually read the criminal complaint, it basically starts off with Audrey Carroll handing this person an 8-page handwritten document that's like, "We're going to bomb a bunch of places." And that's sort of what that article was referencing, is like, we don't know what the CI was doing with this group prior to that. Mm-hmm. We know that they had been a paid informant for the FBI since 2021, not necessarily in left-wing spaces, not necessarily with this group. We know that they don't have any criminal charges, and they're basically just doing it for the money. But yeah, so it's like probably July, TILF gets started. Early October, maybe the confidential informant just like rocks up to one of their meetings, I guess, gets involved somehow. And then by late November, probably after like a couple months, maybe a few months of knowing this person, plans to do extremely illegal actions are getting shared with them. And then from there, things escalate really fast. That whole group chat was created after the CI's narrative, after that like eight page document got shared with them. It seems like, you know, in some ways the initial document was highly planned. It had like procedural details about like the kind of bombs they wanted to build. But in other ways, like the human element of it was not well planned. Like they had blank space at the end of it. Like we could bomb more targets if we can get more people. So they didn't know who all would be involved. And there's like in the criminal complaint, I probably cannot find it right now, but there's like people are talking about, "Oh, I might know a guy who can get us guns," or like, "Oh, I like have a friend who has a friend who's like ex-military." And so there's a lot of social networking, mm-hmm. telling the plan to people who maybe have not demonstrated that they are trustworthy. That seems like that pattern may have been what initially got them in trouble.
Yeah. And from the Justice Department's like memo about the fifth guy who was arrested, Micah James Legnan, 28, of New Iberia, Louisiana. It sounds like everyone who is in contact with these people in this group is also like getting under FBI surveillance, because, you know, this dude is not in California, not at the bomb site, but he's still arrested for leaving his house with a gun or something like that in Louisiana, because he's under FBI surveillance, and they're saying he's doing another attack, although I don't think they provided any evidence about that, other than like anti-ICE sentiment online.
Mm-hmm.
But like, damn, that CI really cooked them, because
yeah.
Every single person that they ever talked to is just cooked now.
Yeah. And it's obvious if you read the complaint that like from the second that they became close with the CI, who was then corresponding with the FBI throughout this entire thing, they were cooked no matter what.
Yeah.
Like they were talking about various evasion measures for surveillance, like with the CI.
Yeah.
And like, it's just like, yeah, we just like had FBI agents tailing them back to their car and back to like pick up packages and whatever. They were like, you know, somebody was being tailed as she went to the store to pick up supplies. So I'm not sure if there's too much like, I think as far as tactics go, as far as like looking at what went right and what went wrong for this group, you just have to focus on like the human element of who you know and who you tell things to.
I guess generally a bad idea to involve people you have known in known for like a couple of months in terrorism plots, and probably not a good idea to tell them about the terrorism notebook as well.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, let's talk about that.
Oh god, do I have? Can I find this easily? No, of course I can't. Yeah, the apparently Carol and the confidential informant were like pretty tight because she told them on Signal something along the lines of like, yeah, I have this notebook full of plans that never really happened and I call it my terrorist notebook. I should get rid of that. Probably you shouldn't do that. Probably you shouldn't tell people that.
Just get rid of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think back again to
the ELF stuff with the woman named Anna, who was a part of the taking down of this large ELF cell. But then later, the ringleader who got released, they did it because they. It turns out the federal government had withheld information, and he was. They got him on like they was considered entrapment because she used a romantic relationship with him. And she provided all, like, here's how you make bombs, here's the targets, how it go for. Mm. Right? I'm not saying that's what this is, but, like, people are like, oh, I never would let that happen to me. I was like, dude, like, you don't get to say that.
Right.
Because that's just not how that works.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of leaning away from the, I mean, I don't know. To me, it just doesn't sound like necessarily entrapment, because they did have another guy who was giving them advice on how to beat urban gorillas or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That was the fifth guy's job.
Right. His name was Eric McDavid, by the way, the guy that was released. I've forgotten that. It was, he spent almost a total of 9 years for it. Yeah, it was just, her name is, from my understanding, I'm just looking, Anna, real name, Zoe Elizabeth Voss. Yeah, she'd been working to infiltrate since 2004. And so it took her about, from my understanding, it was like really like kind of 2 years of work or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing that really just gets me on this one is the really compressed timeline, if it really was initiated by NSPM7. I mean, it's possible that like the CI was in touch with these people beforehand,
mm-hmm.
and then there was just like increased interest in following up on this after NSPM7 was published. But if it really was just a couple of months between NSPM7 and then like this bombing plot being shared with the CI, that is a bit like interesting to me.
Hmm.
Yeah, as far as the group goes, there are other actions that we know of that are above ground and that are like published on their Instagram, seem to be like attendance at a few small protests. I think they ran a self-defense workshop.
Try to organize a punk show or two.
For February, yep, for February. And that...
Is that still happening, I wonder?
maybe.
The one remaining the member of TILF. The
FBI-sponsored punk show.
Well, you know, some, you know, a tanky might be. You know, that's such who brought down the Soviet Union was FBI, CIA-funded punk shows.
Right. But that's a bit, yeah. On their social media pages, that show's advertised, and there are no bans for it yet, but they're asking for, like, basically corporate sponsors so you can pay them money to get your logo on the flyers for the punk show. Which is this is a thing where I'm like, I understand why people look at that and say that the whole group is a false flag operation, because it seems kind of bizarre. But it also just strikes me as something that you would do if you were kind of, like, new and, like, didn't.
Let's give me, like, do you have a business major in your group?
Right.
Like, that's definitely, like, that's what I imagine. Like, if you think of our group, what some people say based off their career or educational background, you know, like, we have a few advertising friends. You're like, that's, like, an advertising major kind of take.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, I mean, yeah, and also, in what world would an FBI do that? But, like, this will dead a stand. By doing sponsored punk shows, will dead in. Because the FBI knows that's weird.
I think the feds have more of a grasp of what would look like normal for an activist group than this activist group did.
Mm-hmm.
Also worth noting that this group is not anarchist, right?
Yes. Like, well, there's nothing explicitly... You could read some of their stuff as leftist, anarchism.
I also could get like kind of a Maoist... Inspired. I mean, they kind of just seem to take a position. Everything's about decolonialism,
mm-hmm.
in which we tend to see that represented when you take a radical position too. Because everyone that's left of the Republicans could talk about decolonialism, but typically Maoists and anarchists, and they have and some of the aesthetics seem kind of similar. But when you look at it, it's kind of broadly leftist. There's no one particular position, I would say. So they kind of seem to. I mean, they might do the whole, oh, I don't have an ideology. The ideology is free the land type of thing, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything after that's up for debate, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, also in terms of, like, how to what extent it's entrapment, a couple of the groups, at least according to this criminal complaint, which is filed by the FBI, were discussing, like, subsequent plans for after New Year's Eve. They were talking about targeting ICE agents and vehicles with pipe bombs beginning in January or February 2026, I'm reading, with Carol noting that would take some of them out and scare the rest of them. So they did. They were not like, I think, depending on to what extent this is true and depending on to what extent like this is the full context, it does seem like they were sort of independently interested in doing this kind of stuff. But, I mean, there's possibilities, like, depending on the sort of character of the CI and, like, what kind of social role they had within the movement, within the group, you know, it's possible that, for instance, like, people were trying to be more radical to impress them.
Right, and that comes up in the story, which I skipped over for the sake of time, but they said, you know, I was young, I respected him, and I thought being radical would impress. Same with that story I was just talking about. He wanted to impress, it was noted he had changed his behavior. It was also funny when I was reading the Wikipedia page there. He said he would threaten to kill her if it turned out she was an FBI agent.
Oh, well.
So he kind of like, he even seemed to imply that he might have actually been like, once you get an inkling of, if you can say that to the person you have interest in, maybe you should back off, right? But yeah, it's interesting. Anything else stand out to you in this? And then we could maybe start talking. Maybe people shouldn't be witch hunting freaks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, anything else you want to point to?
Yeah, I guess not too much. I guess the main thing that I would note from this is that like, they seemed like they were pretty new to doing anything at all. Mm-hmm. And they seemed like they weren't, like, sort of politically well-defined, I guess.
Yeah.
And then they kind of, like, immediately sort of jumped into the deep end in some way or another with this plan. And they didn't... They talk a lot about operational security as in, like, when we're there, how are we going to avoid getting caught on security cameras by the cops? How are we going to avoid spreading DNA evidence? They were talking about wearing, you know, blocking up in order to do this and then de-blocking and places to do that. They were talking about the plan described multiple operational security measures the co-conspirators should take to conceal their identities, such as the use of a burner phone that would be disposed of after the bombings by submerging it in a concrete brick after destroying the SIM and then disposing of the brick in a body of water. So there's a lot of like this kind of stuff. which is like fair, whatever.
I mean, take care of it.
Dispose in a Brit? What do you mean, put in a Brit?
In a concrete Brit, like submerging it, like wet like concrete. Mafia style.
And that, do they realize? That's just insane. To, so, like the level of steps there so is they, incredible. Yeah,
so there were like elaborate plans for operational security from a certain perspective, which is focused on like physical objects, kind of like things that you might see in a spy movie, people doing, and worried about like surveillance cameras and after the fact discovery. And I think that's fair because if there hadn't been FBI infiltration, the next thing to worry about would be after the fact investigation, right? But they seem to have a blind spot around people-based security, maybe? Like, trust.
Vetting.
Yeah.
Vetting and
who
trust.
Who do you trust? Who do you know? Who do you not fucking talk about this with? Because they did, like, they mentioned sharing these documents at meetings that were supposedly about other things, but then, like, they would just have a side conversation about this plan. And they mentioned, like, not trusting someone to be on the ground, but being like, maybe you can play an off-the-ground role, and just that sort of stuff where it's like, it seems like they weren't thinking carefully enough about like personal, like affinity group security, and that maybe they
a need to know basis, yeah, is exactly. Just totally right,
and just like security culture as opposed to physical security or as opposed to like computer security, but like security culture, right. So yeah, I don't know, that's the main thing that I kind of get from reading the actual complaint. And yeah, the only things that they're actually being charged with right now are conspiracy and possession of unregistered destructive device, because they all got arrested before they could actually set off any of the bombs. But yeah, that's, I think, at least the second charge is like 5 to 10 years. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm guessing that they'll probably try and go after them for like terrorism or something, being left wing. Yeah,
not hating immigrants is
right. Yeah,
extremism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what did you want to talk about?
I guess we could, let's hear it. Do you have any last thoughts just from what we were talking about on the files, anything?
I think that's pretty much a summary of the situation.
Yeah. So I guess one thing is I'm not surprised to see, but immediately I'm like, everyone's like, oh, this is fake. It's a false flag. It's a psyop. And I'm like, okay, we can acknowledge the Trump administration seems to be out of date with how modern governance works. But like, I think there are people involved that are smart enough to know that just isn't how you repress the left anymore. Mm-hmm. Or do this, like this idea of false flags. I'm not against the idea that those don't happen. But like, what would be the benefit of this? Because the radical left is already isolated. This is not like, and unless, you know, you could argue that they are stupid and that they're kind of conflating anything that's anti-Trump is radical left, which he seems to believe. Trump seems to believe that. But he has to have people around him that are like, that is just not true. Right? And then, of course, in the end, you could also make the case that it's like fascists or far-right do see every opposition as, like, enemies of the state. Right? But it's, I just feel like I have to ask, what would be the benefit of this be? Because to me, I feel if they really wanted to get the most out of this, they would have let them do the bombing.
Probably.
Because then, look, now this opposition to ICE, opposition to Zionism is now conflating with attacking what seem to have been functionally civilian targets, right? They're not military installations, right? You know, they're corporate in a sense, but they're considered civilian. It's, you know,
yeah.
To me, I feel like they would have benefited more if that is, if it's a false flag, they would have just done it. They would have just blown the shit up. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have arrested, actually, because if people are arrested, I saw someone say, oh, one of the people arrested was actually like an AI picture or something. It was like, they're doing this whole narrative that this is all fake. No one here is real. It's all made up. Which I'm just, and as someone rightly pointed out under another story, it's dangerous. That's a dangerous way to be believing. Mm-hmm. And it's also like, you're just denying agency that people fuck up.
Right. I think it's a convenient thing to want to believe because it's, like, a little bit embarrassing to read this.
Yeah.
Be on the left. It's always embarrassing to read about, like, big plans that get foiled by the FBI.
Especially if they're on your team.
Yeah, exactly. They're on your team, and they come up, they come across in the filing as like a little bit incompetent. So people want it to all be a PSYOP. And like, I do think that there are some aspects of how they're handling it where, like, the FBI is like turning it in, like using it at. It has a little bit of PSYOP juice to it that they're trying. They're trying to get out of it. Like, they're not.
It seems intentional.
They're not revealing the identity of the CI. And I think that's intentional. I think they're like, they want every group on the West Coast to be a little bit afraid that like that guy is in their circles as well.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I think that like they would have at least let them fucking detonate the test things if it was all a false flag. I don't know.
I think the false flag thing is a very complex theory, and I think people who wish violence upon ICE is probably the most rapidly growing demographic of people right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would make sense that some of them do not go about their urges in a very productive or smart way. Mm-hmm. And then it results in things like this. I mean, there have been cases earlier of like the two brothers who were like plotting to kill ICE or something and acquire weapons on their own. And I feel like we're going to be seeing a lot more of this, and it's kind of unfortunate because it's going to be a lot of other situations like these where people don't use smart OPSEC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's kind of like maybe several years ago, say during the Obama administration,
mm-hmm.
you kind of would have to, like, because of what was getting publicized in the news, you would kind of have to be in a certain political milieu already to be like, we should go bomb places.
Yeah.
Like, maybe the idea was not as, like, immediate and, like, surface level obvious in, like, the political discourse that, like, a lot of people are starting to go down this path. But now, because, like, there's a greater awareness that things are really fucked and it's, like, front page news everywhere, there's, like, more people who, one of their first, like, political takes is, like, oh, radical action.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you think about when the reactionary wind picks up, it's wind in the sails of this type of shit, right? Because mm-hmm. it makes people feel like, well, the options don't work. And we know they don't. I'm not going to say, like, oh, the only, you know, it's either you have a foiled
vote.
Yeah, right. But, like, this is a natural response, which you also could argue is a tool of reaction, right? Is then they can like look at what the opposition is doing,
mm-hmm.
right? The most common opposition is no kings, so yeah. So it's interesting, and so one thing I'm worried about, and I know this has happened at other periods, is all these local groups are going to start looking inward,
yep,
and cannibalize themselves. Because, yeah, maybe you will catch someone, but the likelihood is you're going to catch not wolves in sheep clothing, but just sheep. And sometimes what we see as what we might interpret as fed behavior are people that are socially awkward or people that just have, you know, radical ideas, but not the tact to express it or the confidence behind it, which can be interpreted as someone acting as a fed. I mean, the two people I'm recording with, we know people like that in our own space. That have just been just, you have to raise your eyebrow a little bit every once in a while and be like, are we on the same pit? Like, this person's a little weird. And then at 99%, you know, it's 100% of the time, as we know of, they're just fucking weirdos. Right? And that's fine. I mean, Leon Czolgosz, everyone thought he was like when he shot McKinley, anarchists thought he was fake. He was a provocateur. No, he was just a fucking weirdo. Right? And so that's one thing I'm worried about. One thing we I don't know if you read it. I know you read it. The hunting sheep, stop hunting sheep scene, which was its own way of kind of advising about building like a safe network to do action and to not kind of self cannibalize your group. What takeaways did you have from that? Yeah.
So the zine is called Stop Hunting Sheep. It's available. You Google Stop Hunting Sheep zine and you can find links to it online on the internet. And it's like a sort of a proposal for a set of tactics for successfully kind of defending your scene or your activist group against infiltrators. And I found it to be, like, kind of, I was reading it, and I was, like, raising my eyebrows a bit, because what it advocates in some ways is kind of acting a bit like a Fed yourself in the process of making sure that other people aren't Feds. I was reading it, and I was like, I think if I tried these tactics in the scene here, I would, like, immediately get kicked out.
Because the first one is, like, soft questions and hard questions. Hard questions, you want to feel like you're interrogating them.
Well, in soft questions, you don't want to feel like you're interrogating them, but you do want to be interrogating them. And the example was basically, like, what's your mom's maiden name? Like, it was like, oh, so what's your mother's name? Oh, and does your dad have the same last name? And it's like, I'm not sure I can go, like...
No.
Yeah. Right. But it is kind of an interesting... So, like, the people in TILF were all using... TILF. Yeah. We're all using aliases. Which is something that people in our scene are also doing. So they weren't, they didn't know
I'm
each other's.
Right. There's four spoons in the single chat.
So they were all using aliases, so they didn't know each other's real names. And we can observe that it was actually pretty trivial for the feds to get their real names once they were kind of onto them being people of interest, because they could just follow them home. And they could, like, look at cell phone records and stuff like that. And they piece together their real identities pretty fast. But one result for them of using aliases was that they were not able to vet each other, right? And so Stop Hunting Sheep, the proposal in that is basically you should use real names and you should know things about each other, depending on what kind of action you're taking. If you're taking, like, sufficiently serious action, you should kind of know where people live. You should want to know that information, because that's the kind of detailed cover story that a Fed might find it hard to maintain. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, rolling up to the meeting and being like, hi, Dave, that's not my real name, though. Like, that, then, if you intentionally aren't getting any information from people, it's, like, extremely easy. A Fed doesn't need a cover story. They can just, like, hang out. So it was an interesting read, and it kind of, like, makes me think through different threat models for, like, when are aliases useful, when a real name's useful. But sort of the takeaway was to be doing, like, so they advocate doing basically social connection mapping and being like, here's the, like, web of trust within the scene. Here are the people I trust the most. Here are the people that have, like, specific things I don't really know about them that make me hesitant to trust them. And then, like, people who live together, people who trust each other, and going from there and kind of, like, trying to create, you know, trying to expand the group of people that you trust. And then if you have concerns about someone, that zine advocates, like, bringing it up with them, maybe even doing something that feels like an interrogation. Because if you just quietly have concerns and you're like, whatever, we'll just let them do the dishes, you know, but the issue is that then they do the dishes for a few months. And then people who don't share your concerns are like, oh, seems like a stand-up guy. He's been here for 4 months. So there has to be, like, a proactive effort to raise the issue of people being untrustworthy with the group, right, and to, like, possibly root them out or obtain verification that they aren't, basically, as opposed to just kind of quietly being like, I don't trust them, but maybe it's just me, you know?
Right. I mean, that's one thing, though, as we've talked about in, like, low scale shit is, like, even our group chats, like, it's not a bad idea, like, and this is something we've talked about that we need to be doing more, is does everyone know everyone in the chat?
Yep.
Right, if you're in a Signal chat, or, like, if you're going to do an action, if you look at someone like, I don't know you, why the fuck would you do it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no world, because that's all, but then there's the social pressure. Am I going to look less radical or unreliable? You know, which is a problem that, if you have to believe that, your group has a problem.
Right.
Right. And people should never do something they're not comfortable with, especially if it takes doing an action, any action. I'm not saying it has to be what TILF is planning, but, like, that's a risk in its own. Because if you're not confident in yourself, you're more likely to make mistakes or second guess yourself when it comes to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Or second guess your comrades who you're supposed to be trusting.
Right. And so, I mean, it's the difficulty of, right, good security culture should avoid paranoia or that second guessing. But fundamentally, I think very few groups that profess security culture have real security culture.
Mm-hmm.
They have these half measures here and there. They have the pseudonyms, but not, I mean, both of you know where I work.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people know where I work. And it is not hard. You walk into where I work, you talk to the lady at the front,
does this person believe some radical shit? And I'm pretty fucking open about what I believe at work, for the most part, to a degree. And it's the point where it's like everyone around me would be like, oh, yeah, 100% this person would have done that. Right? Which on their own, separate is fine. But when you start like combining shit, right? Like I don't have the greatest culture in that regard. Right? But it's also other people just like bring it up in front of other people. Right? I'm like, I didn't need that person to know because I don't know that motherfucker. Right. Right? But I'm cool with like you two knowing where I work because that's okay within the parameter of like I know you and I trust you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But if it starts to become public information that like if a new third party asks some random person who knows where you work, where does that person work? And then they like divulge the information that like it spreads.
Right. To be fair, as I've talked about, the feds know where I work. And
yes.
And they threatened to come to my work one time. That was fun. You know, they're like, well, if we could, yeah, for, you know, and I mean, my personal narrative is I was visited by the FBI several years ago, about 3 years ago. And they're like, good thing we found you here. Otherwise we had to come to your work. And that would have sucked. Fudge and I went, that's crazy. Like that level of like pressuring me, you know? But yeah. I'm worried about the cannibalization and people going too far in one direction of like, oh, this person's a fed and you fed jacket, which is dangerous. That is dangerous. Or people get too scared in the other way and then just have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to have something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm worried, and this is what the FBI, it's what the federal government wants, Democrat or Republican, doesn't matter. They want people to be afraid. They want to feel like they can't commit action, that they can't trust each other, but also it's all one big psyop. It's all these contradictory things going on that leaves us confused and ineffective to do and to take action. So, any other? I mean, there's just so much. We just know so little that it's hard to say anything. I mean, even with this, like, there's still so many open questions being like, how long has this person evolved? Whose idea was this originally? Right.
I think that information is relevant to a lot of the lessons to draw from this because, I mean, if the CI was in there for a couple of years, then it means, you know, we need to be thinking differently about, like, how do we find CIs? Because at that point, if the CI is there from, like, 2021, that's, like, a really long time.
Right.
And I don't know if there's really any way to distinguish a CI from someone else. So
right. Because also, a CI is different from an agent. A CI has a regular job. This is their side hustle. FBI, like, they're full-time, probably. Like, they're dedicating more time to this, to that work. I mean, again, I'm thinking, how do we do it? I mean, the Panthers were wrong, right? They killed people, they thought. Or, but you know what it was? That the people that ordered those murders were usually the CIs or the feds, right? Or think of, I mean, the worst one is, you know, fucking Fred Hampton, the person that was the infiltrator, you know, because he had been caught up on other shit and was sent in to the Panthers infiltrate. He's the one, from my understanding, I might not be totally wrong, but I'm 99% sure he's the one that drugged Hampton, that allowed him to get shot. And he drew up a map of his house or of his where he was living. Sure. And that dude had been there a while, but he had also suggested things earlier that it should have set them off. Like, why are you suggesting that shit? Because the FBI for a while had been trying to get Hampton out and had been using this infiltrator in particular. He's the basis of the movie Judas and the Black Messiah. And he did an interview about it years later, and he actually killed himself. The infiltrator killed himself after giving the interview. But yeah, I just think about that. Like, the Panthers turned on each other in the culture of fear that they had. I mean, they were also sending, like, fake letters to turn you. Yeah, it was insane. I mean, for us, I mean, the difference now is you take someone's phone and you start sending messages. That's their version of sending letters now, right? Yeah. So you could send messages on an app that you think if this group is trusted, this group chat, someone starts sending weird shit, but you can't tell it's not them. You know, what does that look like now? And how do we know that's not happening? I mean, we do know, like, I mean, they're infiltrating chats for simple shit as, oh, it's an FBI or it's a CIA, you know, it's a courthouse watch for ICE. And an FBI agent infiltrated a Signal chat over that shit. And that's what's crazy is, again,
the Trump administration. They're really mad about Ice Watch. They're like trying to call it domestic terrorism now, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. And it's like, this is that's the most moderate shit you can do. And the fact that moderate shit is getting over policed and called terrorism.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think people are going to go?
Mm-hmm.
Which is both, it's one of those things that liberal could say, well, don't go there because it's what they want, but also Watch shit isn't doing anything. Again, that doesn't mean, go and do a TILF thing and not get caught. I'm just saying we need to be thinking, this arms the liberals against the radical left. It arms the right against the left. It turns the left against itself. It's all this, it's like a web of shit going on that this affects. Right? And of course, someone might hear that, but I'm not a part of the left. You know what I mean? Right? Yeah. So, it's scary shit. Because, if this succeeds, and it probably will, and God forbid what happens in Texas with, DFW.
Prairie Land?
The Prairie Land. Like, fuck. Yeah. Will it become illegal to carry certain types of zines? As we know, CCF and FEI are now domestic terrorist groups and carrying their literature, where I know a bunch of distros that table that.
Right.
Like, what happened? Like, does that just become illegal?
Yeah.
I mean, a bit surprised anarchists are going to get criminalized. That's kind of our thing, right? Wow. But
many such cases.
Many such cases.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, also, they seemed to have, a pretty easy time with this group. This group did a lot of things where, at least the way that they're framing it when you read in writing, it's like, well, maybe you shouldn't have done that. Also, they brought sections of PVC pipe to the bomb assembly day, but they didn't bring any PVC end caps. but yeah, I don't know. I think this is a case where it's something where when it gets publicized, it embarrasses the left. And it causes people to point fingers at each other and to be like, well, to argue about the merits of the plan, which is what we've been doing, and to argue about security stuff. And it causes people to become very scared of a similar thing happening to their group. But I mean, I think it's worth it to keep in mind that that reaction is what the feds want.
Yes.
And there's this, and there's Prairie Land, there are definitely other things in the works at this moment that nobody knows about, but it's not all-encompassing. It's not like the second you print a zine, you're going to have an FBI guy tailing you for the rest of your life.
Oh, thank God. oh, thank God.
There's still space out there for doing things.
Right, don't do nothing.
Do we want to close with reading that other short article that was posted?
Yeah. One of you is going to read this, so they don't have to hear my voice.
Okay. This article is titled "Competence Didn't Stop Us, So Why Would Incompetence?" by Anonymous. Word on the street is that the FBI is gathering info on mutual aid groups and individuals that just don't support the thin-skinned orange man baby currently occupying that poorly designed white building in the fascist capital of the world. For that cartoonish and frankly hilarious dictator directive, NSPM7, they'll be targeting anyone who is anti-American, anti-capitalist, anti-Christian, and blah, blah, blah.
I'm blah, blah, blah.
Because some incel groiper deflated that balloon on Charlie Kirk's shoulders, and now we get to reenact the martyring of Horst Wessel, only with even more embarrassing losers. Whatever, we've seen this shit before. Again and again. And again. And it's not going to stop us this time either. The thing about it this time is that these idiots are now just screaming that they're doing it, and it's going to make identifying informants even easier than it was before. There's no element of surprise to it, so we know to expect them. And we already know the signs from countless zines and blog posts written on the subject. And, let's face it, the only people they're going to get are low-hanging fruit, which means they'll probably just be arresting each other. And with the good security culture, the people they do get won't have any useful information anyway, so it'll just be a waste of time for everyone. Do they think intelligent and experienced saboteurs are going to plan their direct action in a fucking food not bomb signal chat? Do they think anarchists are going to let the overly enthusiastic random newcomer into their affinity groups? Furthermore, do you all know how many times people successfully carry out and get away with direct action because of careful planning and actually being clean on OPSEC? Like, meaning they don't even discuss this shit in a group chat, let alone bust their phone out in a room full of people so someone can snap a pic of the chat and leak it to journalists. Anarchists certainly aren't accidentally inviting journalists to their signal chats either. They're just trying to scare you into compliance. So do as you've always done, ladies, gents, and NBs, and don't comply. Not that I have to tell you that. Keep doing mutual aid. Keep give those people free shit, no questions asked, because fuck capitalism. Fuck Trump and his entire clown shoes administration. Be safe. Be dangerous in the dark, but be boring in the light. Waste the government's precious resources with your caution. And remember that they lie. And they lie badly. And we all know it. Lamal fucking Turtle Island Liberation Front. Give me a break.
And I will say before we go, I have some criticisms of that piece that seem to imply Agency ILF is some op, or that security culture is enough. When in reality, sometimes it's good to trust that voice in the back of your head that just says something's off here. And allowing yourself to feel comfortable in a space to say, I'm not comfortable doing this. Right. But I think this is just another, this is one alternative. There's some to that I like is don't let this stop you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Do have a careful mind, but that doesn't mean everything is some conspiracy of the right wing Cheeto man and his clown posse. But yeah, any last initial thoughts?
There are people who do things and don't get caught.
Wow, great.
There are people who try to do things and get caught. Many things are possible in this world.
Okay.
Yeah. You? Don't plan terrorism with people that you've known for 4 months.
Don't plan terrorism.
That too.
Oh, yeah.
We condemn political violence and property damage.
Yes. All right. Well, again, this has been the Anarchist News Podcast, the 19th of December in the year of our Lord, 2025. This has been Artemis.
It's been Anna.
This has been Arun.
And thank you for listening.
This week's podcast was sound edited by Rosmonte. The What's New was written by Chisel, read by Chisel, and
Farts Blossom, a
we hope this podcast is useful to us, but for anarchists and the
Poison Pathfinder. Couldn't think of my class.
Madison.
We're doing the topic of the week.
Robert Sapolsky's 2023 Determined, A Science of Life Without Free Will, is a recent major influence on me, the writer. Sapolsky, a neuroscientist, argues free will either does not exist or at best exists at a lower rate than we like to believe. Sapolsky's previous book, Behave, states, and human behavior is indeed a mess. A subject involving brain chemistry, hormones, sensory cues, prenatal environment, early experience, genes, both biological and cultural evolution, and ecological pressures, among other things. Some quick examples. A child born in 2026 in Sweden will have a different life path than a child born in the Mesolithic in the same region. Child mortality rate, access to the internet, diet, social context, behaviors will naturally be different. We can even be less radical in comparison. A child raised in a fundamentalist Christian home will be reared and internalized ideas differently than one raised in an atheist home. Beliefs literally shape brain development. On the inverse, impacted frontal lobes seem to predispose people to fundamentalist beliefs. Have you heard of the hungry judge effect? The closer a judge is to lunch or a meal break, therefore hungrier, the less likely a defendant is to receive parole or otherwise receive harsher penalties when found guilty. Back to Sapolsky. His Determined and Behavior are extensive explorations of human behavior and how we are not really in the driver's seat, to put it some way. Sapolsky speaks about how our unconscious brains make decisions before we are consciously aware of even making it. Get angry and yell? You were going to do that before you knew it. Able to calm down and walk away? Your brain composition, hormone levels, and more also decided that. Outside factors also play a part. Maybe your friend can calm you before you raise your voice, or maybe they instigated it. Sapolsky uses his determination.